following conscious. You may know a lot of them, never think that you got this. Wise words, pay attention to these wise words. And people follow people, but seldom following dreams. They tend to follow dreams, but never know what they mean. These are wise words, pay attention to these wise words.
Today, we got a special guest. We're here again on Wise Words. We actually got another Zoom meeting, as you can tell. But today, we have none other than Andrew Wilson, a.k.a. Drewby, also known as the Meme Lord. Man, it's an honor to have you here. Last time we was on something like this, I was on the Crush of the Day podcast with you, so it was only right that we return the favor.
Hell yeah, man. Well, I appreciate you giving me an opportunity to come out and be here with you, man. I appreciate you having me and being on my show, too, man. I know your show was one of the ones that got a lot of engagement. People really appreciated your story, man.
I hope so. I shared the hell out of it, so I hope it got some numbers for you. So that's pretty cool, man. But, man, like I said, it's an honor to have you here. I've always considered you, you know what I'm saying, a mentor for me. You've always been there whenever I reached out, so to have you here to kind of share some value with, you know, our audience is, it's just great to have you here. Tell us a little bit about, you know, you before you started this journey on the way to excellence, and tell us a little bit about what you do now.
Yeah, man. So as of right now, I am the chief marketing officer over at Apex and Breakfree Academy. We are an 8-figure per year coaching and consulting program that really helps small business owners and entrepreneurs make more money. You know, that's the easiest way to explain what we do. If you're in the game of business, we can help you make more money. And, you know, to go back to how I got to this fancy C-suite chair that I sit in these days, man, it didn't start like this. I grew up in the streets, much like many of the people who probably come in listening to this and who you guys grew up with in the game, man. I was a drug dealer in my teens. I was, you know, in and out of different high schools. I spent the majority of my time skipping class, getting high. And I kind of went down that path that most of us go down of fast money, doing what we do, just kind of living, you know, footloose and fancy free. But within that, I've always been blessed with the figure it the fuck out gene. You know, you could put me anywhere in any situation with any group of people, and I would figure out how to get by, how to, you know, infuse myself into the community and how to end up on the right side of the situation, right? Not hooked on all kinds of crazy drugs, doing no dumb shit. I always ended up with the right people kind of moving towards the right direction until I realized at some point, hey, man, the ladder I'm climbing up is on the wrong wall of success, as Jim Rohn says. And it's one of those things where you watch people get, you know, in trouble, get killed, or, you know, for me, I wasn't so far into it that I had that kind of concern, but I ended up getting, you know, hooked up with my girlfriend. We got married, we had a kid. And at a certain point, when you go down to that level in life, I'm 36 now, you realize, hey man, I don't want to act like a young 20-year-old forever. This life isn't going to last forever. So I started understanding that in order to be the example of a man and father that I never had in my life, which is why I ended up on the paths that I did, I was going to have to step up and really make some changes. And so in that journey, I went from being a drug dealer who, you know, sold insurance by day and nickel bags at night to like, hey, man, I've built a marketing company. I understand sales at a level now that is significantly higher than most, only because I've made the decision at some point to go all in on personal development. And, you know, for many people that are in the game, we're always learning, we're always hustling, we're on this grind, and it's this constant search for knowledge of like, hey man, what's the next move? What's the next thing that I can do to put some money on the table or to put a roof over my head or take care of my people? And what I realized is that when we take that energy and we shift it into a more positive mindset and we focus on more positive actions, the results are equally good. It's just sometimes it takes a little longer. And that's the thing, right? A lot of us don't have that patience. That's why we go for the fast money, because it's like, hey, man, I don't want to wait. I don't want to wait. But a guy told me one time, I'll never forget this, Ryan Steumann, a guy you and I know, you know, very well, he was in a video, is like, hey man, if you're in sales and you're not making at least $10,000 a month, you're in the wrong fucking business. And I was like, right. Man, I'm in
I know
sales.
that.
I'm making $5,000 a month. The fuck, fuck you, man. Who you? You don't know me. But then it made me question myself, and so I went to the owner of the agency I worked at and was like, "Well, hey, man, I want to be making $10,000 a month, and I want to figure out how I can do this, that, whatever." And he said, "You just got to be patient. In like 15 years, man, you'll have your name on the door. You'll own one of these things, and you'll be cruising." I'm like, "I don't know about y'all, but hey, man, I can't be guaranteed. I got 24 hours. I don't want to, try to bank on 15 years." So it was that
Right,
kick in the
right.
ass to say, like, hey man, patience is important, but if you want to make a change, you got to take action. So that's when I really went all in on personal development and said, hey, I'm going to get my act together. I know sales, but in the game making sales since I was 13 years old. What do I need to sell and who do I need to sell it to in order to start making the kind of money I want to make? And how do I need to get that in front of more people? And that's where I got into marketing and kind of where you and I initially met. In the phone sites community and learning how to do this online marketing stuff, like, hey, we're kind of small town hustlers that are trying to go legit and get ourselves together. Like, how can we really learn and grow and develop? And I was blessed with a few opportunities, met a couple of the right people that plugged me in. And, in doing so, I've now had the pleasure of speaking on stages all across the country. I've got 3 books that I've written, I've got best-selling, digital products, and like, podcast with 1,000 episodes. It's almost weird to talk about now where I am versus where I was just even 5 years ago. But that's the power of getting focused and intentional, man. And I'm blessed to be around guys like you that give me an opportunity to share the stage and put some value out there.
That's awesome to have you here. But what do they say? It's like, great things are there for they're left by those who hustle it or whatever. Like I'm messing that up. I can't think of the exact quote right now, but I was thinking about it when you said that. But what was like the breaking point for you where you realized, you know what I'm saying, like you took the leap of faith, you're from Ohio originally, correct?
Yep, so I was born in Florida, spent some time there. My dad was a really shitty drug dealer, and I don't know if he got robbed or took advantage of some dudes. So we got run out of Florida. I lived in Arkansas in a trailer out on a freaking bull farm for a couple of years, and then, or a couple of months, and then moved up to Ohio when I was about 6 years old. And that's where I grew up, was in Toledo, Ohio. It was basically a baby version of Detroit, is what they always said, because we were right down the street from them on 75. And, I didn't grow up in a bad area, but I was exposed to both sides because of where I was. So the school that I went to when I walked to school in elementary, I mean, it was through the projects that I walked to get to school. And so like I got connected with these different communities, and that's where I kind of had to learn how to plug in and assimilate. And the real breaking point for me was just like, hey man, if I'm gonna go all in on myself, it was kind of at that moment where it's like, hey, I'm hustling really hard and I'm tapped out making as most as they're telling me that I can make. And like, I can't sit still. Like, I'm not gonna just stay here in this, glass ceiling fighting this thing that I can't get out of. And it was like, I've got to do something. And that's when we launched
Something
the
different.
marketing company. Yep. And that's where we started getting some sales. And I realized, hey man, in 1 weekend we made 10 grand, where it usually takes me fucking 6 weeks to make 10 grand. Like, I did it in a weekend selling digital marketing. Like, I'm in the wrong business. And I said, all right, cool. Here's what I'm gonna do. Yep, it
Was
was
like a lot.
it. I gave myself a challenge. I said, cool, man, you're gonna go all in and you got 90 days to be making $10,000 a month, or you go back to the fucking boss with your tail between your legs and you apologize and just sit there and fucking wear your khakis and sell insurance. And within 45 days, I'd made $30,000. And I was like, fuck, here we go, let's go. And that's when I knew. And that's when I was like, all right, cool, babe. I know that you think I'm crazy and everybody in your family thinks I'm selling coke for some weird dude out of Texas, but like, I'm quitting my job. We're selling our house and we're moving down and going all in. And so, I mean, fuck, that's a whole nother story in and of itself. But like, that was kind of the moment. It's like, hey, man, I'm going to do this. And if I can't get to this number by a certain date, I'll go back. But at least I had a target. And once you have a target, as long as you go all in, man, fuck, you can't lose.
Was you scared when you initially decided to, you know what I'm saying, leave everything behind and move down to Texas?
Bro, I had a 2-year-old son, a wife that I had been married to for 3 years. We had just bought a home, so we had a mortgage. Like, fuck yeah, I was scared. I literally gave up the American dream and gave it, like, fuck it, let's go and try something fresh. Hell yeah, I was scared, but I also knew that if I ever wanted more than I had, I was going to have to be willing to give up everything to get it.
Say that one more time, that last part.
If,
Yeah,
if I ever want to have more than I have, I'm going to have to be willing to give it all up to get there.
Man,
the hell
that's
of a
a gem.
sacrifice.
Man. Absolutely. So since you moved, you got into Apex and stuff. So you got, you launched a program called Closer Memes. And tell us just a little bit about that. What makes you the meme lord? And show us the
Well,
tattoo.
I'm the meme lord because I'm the only idiot dumb enough to tattoo meme lord across my fingers. But that whole process, man, it started because I love memes. And anyone who's listening to this right now, in their phone right now, has a group chat or has a couple of homies that they send memes to on a daily basis. And that may be the only communication that there is. Like, I don't ever say shit to the dude except send him fucking memes. Or call them on occasion when we're having a barbecue, but that's it. And so, as I was going through sales and going through this process, I kind of realized, like, hey, man, I'm a human and I like to do business with humans. I want, like, people buy from people they know, like, and trust. And this is for anyone who's an entrepreneur or a salesperson right now. Just take this to heart. People don't buy from logos, they don't buy from brands, they buy from people. And they buy from the people who represent those brands. They buy from the people who are the facilitator to getting access to that brand. So you got to understand, people do business with people because even if you walked into, let's say you're going to buy some Jordans, if you walk into the shoe store and the clerk is an asshole, you're going to call him a fucking asshole and go buy your shoes somewhere else because you know that
Exactly.
you can get, it's a commodity. It can be gotten from somewhere else. Anything in this world at this point, it can be gotten from multiple sources. So to be successful, you have to be a great people person, and people have to know, like, and trust you enough to do business with you. We can all agree on that. What I realize is, for me, if I'm trying to make some sales and connections, I want it to be genuine. And if I've had a conversation with you and I've built some level of rapport, and then I follow up with you in a standard salesy way that's like, hey man, I just want to see if you want to buy my shit. Hey, you ready to pay? Like, did you sign the contract? Like, after a while, that's kind of like, you're not my friend, you're just trying to sell me some shit, right? There's a difference there. You kind of start to feel that off-putting, like, eh, all right, never mind. But where I
Why,
found the meme.
why do we as humans get that feeling? Because I've got that feeling exactly like you said. Why do we get that?
So humans are wired to be givers by nature. Like, God put us on this earth to be givers. But what's happened over time as givers is we realize that at a certain point, people are truly takers also. And so when you're in a sales conversation, firstly, I always look at it as if I'm going into a sales conversation, it's almost like going into battle. Because we're about to have an exchange and one of us is going to win. Either I'm going to win because I got the deal and the thing that I wanted at the price I wanted it at, or you're going to win because you sold me the thing at a price that was way more than I should have paid for it, but you did what you did. Right? Like, someone's going to win in every transaction. Like, that's just kind of the way this works. So, from a sales perspective,
Can there
go
be
ahead.
fair transactions?
1,000,000%. Yes, and this is where I'm going with this because as humans, when we enter into a conversation, that's why we have to build rapport before we make a sale. Because even if you, like I said, you could walk into a store super stoked to buy something, know they have it, know it's the right price, and be all about it. But if you get mistreated when you walk in the store, instantly your defense goes up and you're like, nope, not getting my business. You didn't earn it, you don't deserve it. So when you think about that, like, that's how everything happens, is it's just kind of an instantaneous mindset. Like, we're kind of built this way because we want to know, hey, is if I eat the apple from the tree, am I going to get taken advantage of, or is God going to smote me at this point, right? Like, it's a fucking naturally ingrained thing all the way back to the beginning of time. So when we build rapport with somebody, we're essentially creating a level of trust. But if I'm at a certain point, only reaching out to you because I'm trying to get you to do something that's in my benefit, you're going to lose trust in me.
You're gonna
I
feel
explain
like
that well?
Yeah, like I'm getting used or whatever. I'm just a means to your end.
Basically. Yes, yeah. Exactly. And so that's what happens in sales, is at a certain point of the follow-up process, if you're not creating some sort of additional rapport building in that process, you're losing a little bit of trust over time. And so that's where the meme, I feel like, kind of creates that extra emotional connection. Because like, if I've sent you the thing and I know that you're a busy dude and you've got things going on, and I want to follow up with you without feeling salesy or putting you in a position to feel like I'm pressuring you to make a decision, if I send you a funny meme that's like, hey, man, you good? You might open that and laugh and be like, this fucking guy. Yeah, I'm good, man. Sorry, I do need to get this done, like X, Y, Z, this, that, whatever. Or you might be like, fuck, I've been meaning to do that. I'm in the moment. I got 5 seconds. Let me do this.
Hey, whereas if I said, so I've used it several times, especially the you good meme. Like, I've closed many deals off of that. So,
bro, I've made $1 million in cash commissions to my bank account with that one meme, using it in my sales process. Like, I can look and track it back to $1 million in cash deposited into my bank account from using that one meme in my sales process. And not just me, like, 1,000 different people that have bought my course have done this and had success with it, too.
The new one, the retargeting ad where you got the chick with the sign that says you left it in the car. Dude, and you got me with that. But every time I see it, I ain't even gotten into my car yet. But I'm like, fuck, I need to go get that. Even though that's a good retargeting ad, though, for sure.
And so that's the beautiful thing, that I'm like using memes to create that additional rapport. Because here's the funny thing. If a picture is worth 1,000 words, how much can you say with a meme?
More than 1,000, huh?
Because we've seen memes literally sway presidential elections.
Man, you trigger emotions too with something
that's super mean. Yep, and that's the thing that we're trying to do, because with sales, people buy on emotion. They make decisions with logic, but they buy on emotion, because logically, if something doesn't, it could be all the way there, but if emotionally you're like uncertain, you're not going to buy it. But it can logically make no fucking sense. But if you're like, this is the thing, like, this is it, you will spend thousands and thousands of dollars on shit that like makes no fucking sense. Yeah, but if you're emotionally driven, you will do it. That's the cool thing about memes, is they elicit emotion.
Everybody hates to be sold, but they love to buy, though. So.
Exactly. Yep. And so that's, I created a course on my process, how I make memes, where I find the funny memes, what my psychological process is. Because the cool thing about memes is it's not a new thing. It literally goes back to the late 70s and early 80s. And it's a biological term that was created by a guy named Richard Dawkins. Because memes are actually a transfer of information between cultural communities. So an example of a meme that like you wouldn't think of, but let's say you were from a different country and you had never been to America, and you came to America and someone sneezed and you heard someone else say, God bless you. And you're like, that's interesting. I wonder why they did that. And they're like, well, the reason we do that is it's tradition, because if you don't, then your soul escapes, or whatever the fucking weird thing is that you believe, right? And then this person goes back to the country they're from and someone sneezes and they're like, oh, God bless you. And they're like, well, why'd you do that? And they're like, because I don't want your soul to escape, man. And so now that catches on. Well, that's a meme. That is a transfer of information between cultural communities. It's like, hey, man, one monkey watched another monkey take a coconut and smash it with a rock and crack it open and get the food. So that monkey went back to its monkey clan, cracked the coconut with the rock, and now everybody gets to eat. That's a meme. That's how it all started. So psychologically, this is ingrained in us to have this thing where it's like, we see someone do something, we're emotionally connected to it, but we want to share it with others. And this goes back to what I started with of, hey, everybody on this call has a person in their phone or a group of people that the only thing that they do to communicate is send memes to each other.
Yeah, I got a group like that for sure. You know what one of my pet peeves is, though? Is when people call it memes.
The memes.
I've never heard that.
I don't know. We're old at this point, but I hear a lot of older people be like, "Did you see that one little meme?" It's not it.
I embrace it. I just love them for it, man. Because that's, you know, hey, we say a bunch of weird shit, and the kids that are younger than us say a bunch of weird shit, and we're like, "The fuck did you just say to me, kid? What are you talking about? The meme lord. That's me. Yeah. Me the meme lord.
Tell us about your shirt, man.
So this one, this is the Fuck Your Excuses shirt. This is one of the sayings that we have inside of Apex. It's one of our core values, as a matter of fact. It's our first core value, which is responsibility. We make no excuses and or fuck your excuses. And so the whole premise behind that, man, is not that any person is perfect. None of us are perfect. We all fuck up. We all make mistakes. We all forget to do things. But when you're called out on it, you have a choice. You can make an excuse about it and you can rationalize why you didn't do the thing that you were supposed to do. Or you can just own it and say, yeah, fucked up. I'm going to get that done. Right. And
you know the cool thing about that? The cool thing about that is, like, when I first started, like, accepting that motto or core value, and I started, like, calling other people out on their excuses, I would start to realize my own excuses. So, like, immediately I could, you know what I'm saying? Like, I couldn't even say it anymore because I'm like, well, fuck, that's just an excuse. So, fuck your excuses.
And so, when does, what's the line there, like, the barrier of some excuses? All right, say, like, so let's look at it in sports. Your favorite team lost yesterday, right? There's things they did that the other team did exceptionally well, like, let's say, in football. We couldn't stop the run. That's why we lost. Is that an excuse or is that a reason? So if we lose next week because we can't stop the run, then it becomes an excuse, right? But if we take that and we learn from it and we make it better and we say, hey, we're going to stop the run next week, right? What's the difference there in an excuse and a logical reason why something didn't get done?
I really love that question. And I also love the way that you framed it, because you're right. There are some situations where it's like, hey, man, the lesson here is that we didn't do this. And so we can call that excuse or we can look at it as a lesson. But as you said, if you knew going into it, that's what you needed to do and you didn't do it, yeah, then that's an excuse. So right. I think it's the onus is on, were you aware of the thing going into it? And if so, then you should have been more prepared.
So the team, then what you're saying at the end of the season, when the media asks, hey, why didn't y'all make the playoffs? Well, we couldn't stop the run all year. Well, you knew that back in week three, right?
Correct.
So now it's an excuse because you didn't fix it.
Yep. It's a continued rationalization of a lack of effort.
I like it.
Continued. Say that again. Rewind. Say that one more time.
A continued rationalization about your lack of effort.
Man, we're getting all kinds of wise words here today. I like it.
I don't know. That one just came to me, so I like it. So better write that one down and say that.
That's exactly what it is, because you can make excuses sound logical and, you know, like if you were late for something, well, the traffic or whatever, well, you could have left 10 or 15 minutes. It always seems like there's something that you can do different, right, to get to the end.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? If you're a leader and someone comes in and they're normally on time and they happen to be 15 minutes late one day, you might, instead of like reaming their ass, you may go, hey, man, I just wanted to make sure everything's okay. You're normally not late. And they're going to be going, bro, you're never going to fucking believe it. There was this crazy accident, this, that, whatever. And you're going to go, okay, cool, no big deal. Like, as long as we get back on track, we're good. But then the next time they're late, if they've got some like, well, there was this crazy, now you're like, okay, well, that sounds very suspiciously like the last time you were late. So that sounds like an excuse versus, hey, man, sounds like legitimately some shit happened. It happens. This is life. You owned it. You're here now. Let's fucking ride and keep rolling.
Mm-hmm.
So let's change gears a little bit, man. I want to talk about the importance of mentors. Like I said earlier, I consider you a mentor. You've always been there for me anytime I have any questions. But what do you think the importance is of having a mentor? And do you have mentors? I know the answer, but for people listening.
So, A, I believe mentors are 1,000,000% important. B, I think what I've realized is that throughout our entire lives, we have mentors. We just give them different names, or we associate them in a different way. Because, like, if you think back when we're young, our parents are our mentors. It's like, hey, man, I learned from them. Or then, like, our aunts or our uncles or our grandparents. You know, some people had, like, that grandpa or that grandma that was, like, the one in their life that they could turn to because maybe their parents were shitheads or whatever. So it was, like, there was that one person in their life. Sometimes, like, for me, my dad was in and out, so I always kind of gravitated to, like, wherever I was working, whoever, like, the man was in that business that had it together the most, that's kind of who I gravitated to, because I was always seeking, like, hey, man, I don't really have a dad, so I need some man stuff to learn from that's not, like, fucking the hustlers and the gangsters out in the street, because that's what happened. Those sometimes become people's mentors, right? We get out and we get running in the streets and we see the dope boys and they're making money and they got chains and cars and they're like, hey, young buck, let me pour into you. Let me give you some game. And you're like, yeah. So you're being mentored by the guys that are trying to teach you their game of life. Well, again, that's kind of that realization that at some point you are the culmination of the five people you surround yourself with. So here's a great lesson in life. If you look at your five best friends and you put them all together and you average out what they make, where they live, who they spend their time with, and what kind of lives they live, well, that's about the estimate of what kind of life you're going to have.
That's my favorite. That's probably my favorite quote is, show me your friends, I'll show you your future type thing. Whatever. You know, if you're in the room constantly in the presence of four millionaires, you'll eventually be the fifth. If you're in the presence of four junkies, you'll be the fifth. I love that.
What's that's the quote. And there's one that I heard, I want to say it's Denzel Washington. He's like, hey man, you hang out around the barbershop long enough, you're going to get a haircut.
How important is it in this mentor protege relationship for that to be identified and established? Like, if I'm mentoring to somebody, I want to know that. Like, you know, if you're watching me do something, you know, and you're learning from me, I want to make sure that I'm, you know what I'm saying, on my P's and Q's. You know what I mean? And
I love that question. Go ahead.
Yeah, and on the flip side of that, like, if you're in a profession, you know what I'm saying, and you're going to somebody and you're up under their wing, how important is it for you to let them know, like, hey, you know, I'm learning this, you know what I'm saying? Like, you're mentoring me. I'm following your footsteps.
Ooh, that's so good. Damn it, Whitey, I like you, brother. We're going to be friends. We're going to connect more after this because I like your frame of reference here and your mindset, man. So that's a fantastic question because there's really two different things you're asking there, right? So let's start with the mentor standpoint, right? I look at my life right now as I am a mentor 24/7. I have a wife. I have a son. I have a community of people that rely upon me to be an example and to show up and to continue proving that no matter where you come from in life, you can have more. And I've accepted that responsibility. And so now I am a mentor 24/7, whether you pay me for my time or you don't pay me for my time. I have to operate with the mentality that every decision, every action is done in such a way that if there was somebody watching me and I wasn't aware, that I would be okay with them seeing what I'm doing. Because what happens in the dark always comes to light. And you guys know that more than anybody, right? You've seen it. Hey, man, what happens in the dark always comes to light. So the mentality that I have to operate with, and again, I will say this, I am not perfect. I screw up just as much as the rest of us, but I have to think differently because I've accepted that responsibility of being an example and a mentor in my life. And so from that standpoint, I do try to make it very clear to the people around me that, hey, I can't help it, but I'm probably going to at some point offer you some unsolicited advice or give you some things that I think could benefit you, because, like, it's just in my heart to do that. I want to leave every person, every conversation, every relationship better than when I found it. And I've been blessed with so much wisdom from people in my life that it would be wrong of me not to continue sharing that. With that said, the other side of that is from the mentee standpoint, right? So if you're someone who's up and coming and you're like, hey, I want to get a mentor. I want to find someone who can pour into me. How do I do that? Like, do I got to pay them? What if I don't have money? This is a very serious question when you're getting started. It's like, hey, man, like, I don't have $5,000 a month to pay for Drewby. I don't have, you know, $2,500 a year to join Apex or whatever it is. It's like, okay, cool. So here's where you can approach someone, ask them for information and value, and do so in a way that still provides them value without a monetary exchange. And what I mean by that is with the advantage of social media, you can go and literally find any person in the world who's living the kind of life that you want to live. And I say that with a grain of salt because it's really easy to fake on social media, folks. Like, let's not get it twisted here. But you can follow someone and you can typically see if they are who they are and whether they're the kind of person that you truly want to be like or surround yourself with. And so the first thing,
if you've been around a while, you can learn that in 5 minutes. You know what I'm saying? If you're good enough.
And that's another reason I took that NLP training, because, I mean, at this point, man, I want to know more and more how people think, how they process information, because I want to be able to get to know someone quickly.
Do you believe where we're at right now, and I'm talking about as a whole society, is the majority of people who they present themselves as, or is the majority of people not? Or are they even aware of it?
So I would say it's 80-20. That people are who they are, but they're also not everything that they are. I believe people have to wear a lot of masks in their lives because of the number of relationships that we are required to maintain. So to explain that further, the mask we wear at home as parents and spouses and friends is different than the mask that we wear in public when we're by ourselves walking around, and is different than the mask when we are in the office or in a professional setting dealing with someone in a different situation. And I say that because we all know that there's certain characters that we have to play and embody in order to have the confidence, the emotion, and the mental fortitude to make it through certain situations. Is that making sense?
Yeah.
So I think really, in a sense, people are aware and they are who they are, but I think who they are around you is different than who they are over there, and it's different than who they are here. And it's pretty rare to find someone who is who they are at all times. And sometimes, like, 99% of the time they are who they are, but you may still find someone in that one weird setting where you're like, damn, I've never seen them act that way before. That was different.
Yeah, you know, like, the environment can change for that. So, you know.
Exactly.
I mean, I think it's important that you change. You know, I think it's a good characteristic to be able to kind of blend in with different crowds and, you know, different environments.
I just thought about, you know, if you've ever been in a car with somebody and y'all get pulled over, you know, characters can come out of that. Them type of situations let you know who somebody really is real quick.
Real quick.
Real quick. And that's the thing, right? Because that's part of life. We learn how to judge. We learn how to quickly develop these situations or these processes that we go through in order to be able to put ourselves in the best position to move forward. You know, when we meet someone, it's real quickly, hey, is this person someone I even like? And can I trust them enough to tell them the information I want to discuss with them? Because words are powerful. I mean, this is the Wise Words podcast, man. We both know we've heard some things that could, like, really make a positive impact. But we also know we can say something to someone and they can take it and twist it and tell it to someone else. And it can have one of the most devastating impacts of our lives over something that wasn't even, like, we never said it, but it got twisted and turned because people know how to make words sound different. The inflection is important. The way that it's said, the context, the location, the place, that all matters.
And now it seems like more than ever, you know, like that's a big deal right now. What you say and what gets out there to the public, you know, like
and how they take it.
Yeah, how it's painted, how it's presented. So yeah, that's cancel culture.
I'm gonna switch gears again if you don't mind.
Nah, come on.
Man, so I've been watching you, you know what I'm saying? I've been following you, stalking you, whatever you will call it. I know this, but man, I want you to tell everybody a little bit about your morning routine.
My morning routine. So I'll preface this with, you guys see me now in my handsome ruggedness, but there was a point in my life where I weighed over 300 pounds. I walk around right now between 200 and 205, 210 if I had some
money. How tall are you?
6'1".
Okay. Well, it's a little bit. I was better.
A big boy.
Yeah, but I'm 5'9". If I was 300 pounds, it'd be a bad deal.
Yeah, so I mean, I'll send you some pictures. You guys can post it when you guys put this out there, because I mean, Jordan's seen it, but like, I was a big boy. And so my morning routine, the reason that I've built it the way that I have is because I do not like working out. I'm gonna just be honest with y'all.
Was that before or after your? I know you said you went through kind of the light bulb came on or whatever, and you kind of made a life transition. Was that before or after that?
So that's a great question. I was 300 pounds when I came out of high school and into, I think I was about 18, 19 years old. I got a third shift job. I worked at night. I pounded energy drinks. I ate like shit, slept like shit. I got fucking fat. And then I decided I wanted to get my act together. I cut out all my soda, all my sugar, all that shit. And I went from 300 pounds to 215 pounds. Now, in that time frame, I also started smoking 15 to 20 blunts a day. I would eat one Mama Rosie's microwave pizza. Like, I literally was on the grind hustling from sunup to sundown. And I basically was just, like, living on nicotine and fucking Red Bull. You know what I mean? So I wasn't a healthy 215. When I met my wife, you know what happens when you start going on dates and then you're going out more, and then she got pregnant. And I don't know if you guys, you know, if you ever had that sympathy weight, like when she got big, I got big. And so I went back from 215 to like 285 pounds at my biggest when my son was born. And we went through that phase where the first couple months it was like, oh, well, you know, we're adjusting and we're parents. And then it was like 6-7 months later, my wife's going, hey man, like, I love you, but like all this is not, it's not doing it for me anymore. And it was like a hard thing to hear, man. That's a gut punch for a man to hear. Like, damn, your wife is not feeling you right now. That's kind of fucked up. But hey, man, she ain't wrong either. Because when you met, you were in shape and you had it together. Now, it wasn't the healthiest, but you were in shape and had your shit together. So I had to make that decision to go on that journey. And in doing so, I went from, you know, I used to basically wake up and toss and turn from 5 in the morning to 7:30 when I'd finally get my fat ass out of bed. So I told her, hey, man, here's what I'm going to do. When my body says get up, I'm just going to get up and I'm going to go walk. And when I was walking, that's when I started listening to podcasts. I started listening to Audible, YouTube motivational like Jim Rohn and Eric Thomas. That's when I found Ryan Stueman and some of these guys. And I just kind of went all in. And I started, I would literally just get up and walk 4 miles every day. And then few months in, I bought a bicycle. I started riding my bike long distance. I started doing 100-mile bike rides on that fucking thing. And I kind of just went all in on, you know, getting my act together and getting my morning set up. So here's my morning routine now. 4 a.m. the alarm goes off 7 days a week. First thing I do is I wake up, I chug a big glass of ice water, and then I write down the 5 things I'm grateful for. Because we have the G-code process that we could talk about. Jordan, you may have even mentioned it before. But I start my day with gratitude, because without gratitude, you're basically telling the universe that you're not appreciating the things that you have. And in doing so, you're telling it that you don't want anything additional. Well, fuck that. I want the whole world, baby. So like, I'm grateful for everything I have, because I know that if I'm not grateful, I'm not going to have a great day. And let's be honest, man, shit's going to happen. So when you're having a shitty day, it's nice to be able to look back and be like, yeah, I'm having a shitty day, but my wife's still in the room. you know, she's laying in bed next to me. My son's here. I've got this beautiful home. I've got an opportunity to be here with you gentlemen. Like, fuck, man, I got a lot of things to be grateful for. So even if something bad's going on, I can handle it because I got good things in my life. So I do my gratitude. I walk in here. I take a shit. I go, well, not in here, but in the room next door. I take my shit. I let the dogs out. I let them do their business. I feed them. I come back in. I read from my dailies every day. So I have three books that I read from every single morning. You can't see them on here, but it's the Leadership Promises for Every Day by John Maxwell, Ryan Holiday's The Daily Stoic, and The Daily Laws by Robert Greene. So they're just one page a day out of each thing. It's just some short little wisdom that I can take in. Then I go start my workout. I do a 60 to 90 minute workout every single day. On the weekend, sometimes I'll sleep in a little bit and I'll take a walk with the family. But like, I still, first thing every day, I have to do a workout or I feel fucked up. Like, that's my routine now. So like, I feel guilty if I don't go and work out. Because here's the question that was asked of me one time and it kind of fucked me up. And I'm going to hit you guys with it too. So you're grinding, you're working hard, you're taking care of your family, you're doing all of these amazing things, right, boys? Like, I know you're doing that. Here's what I got to ask you, bro. How would you feel if you had a heart attack and you had to sit up in heaven while some other asshole raised your kid, slept in your bed, ripped your money, and had sex with your wife because you didn't take the time to take care of yourself and get your shit together?
Yeah. When you put it in that perspective,
No, I'm good. Like, even if it's your baby mama, like, you don't want somebody doing that with your kid. Like, no, man, no, I'm going to be the one that's here to take care of shit. That's why time is so important, because people run around here with this mentality like, oh, $25 an hour. Like, I make money, money, money. Well, hey, man, if you only got 24 hours left to live and I'm like, hey, bro, here's $25. I need you for the next hour. What are you going to tell me? You're going to tell me to fuck off. I'm like, the fuck out of here. $25. Bro, I'm 25 million. There's a number, right? Somewhere there's a number that you will trade one of your last hours, because it's like, hey, man, whatever I got to do for the next hour is worth it for that amount of money, because I'm going to give it to my family. But there's a line. Exactly. And $25, $50, $100 an hour ain't it. But people still run around here acting like they got all the time in the world to do the things or to get shit done. Sorry, boys. That ain't how it is. No one's guaranteed anything. So when you change that mindset of I'm just going to get to that later, or I got time to, I'm going to do it now because I don't know how much time I have left. It's pretty crazy how things happen in your life.
Which brings me to my next question.
That's some of the real shit I've heard on there.
Hmm? You say what?
I said that's probably some of the real shit I've heard on this podcast.
Well, yeah, shout out to Ruby. I knew it was going to be powerful. But tell us what your calendar looks like, Jeremy.
So Monday through Friday up at 4 a.m., 4 to 4:30 is my reading and meditating. 4:30 to 6 o'clock is my workout time. From 6 to 8 is my morning with my family. We have breakfast, we have coffee, we talk about our day. And during the school year, I take my son to school. That's a non-negotiable. I literally drive 25 minutes in the wrong direction to drop him off at school so that I can drive 30 minutes back to my office. But it's a non-negotiable for me, because that's that time that we get together every single morning to be boys, to chat, to sing, to fucking goof around. So drop him off at school. I'm in the office by 8 o'clock. Between 8 and 11, that's my administrative time. So everything I'm doing between that time is literally just me with headphones in, fucking rocking out, sending emails, sending follow-ups, updating information, just doing data. And the whole goal is that after I take my lunch at 11 to 11:30, I get back, I'm settled in. Usually between like 11:30 and 1, we have some team meetings and some daytime stuff for the office. And then between 1 and 5, that's when I'm trying to schedule my sales calls. Because I know between 1 and 5, that's work time, that's busy time. And I know between 1 and 5, if I'm doing 30-minute calls, that's a five-hour stretch. I can do 10 calls in that time. Out of that 10 calls, I'm expecting to close at least 20% of my deals every single time. So 2 deals a day, 5 days a week, that's 10 deals a month, or 10 deals a week times 4 weeks, that's 40 deals a month. Take that 40 times whatever your average commission is on what you sell, and that's how much money you can expect to make. It's kind of just simple math, but this is the way I look at it, right? If I make 100 outbound attempts a day, if I talk to at least 10 people, I'll try to close 2 sales. A good day is getting 2 out of 3, because some days you might call a whole bunch of people and have a lot of conversations but not close anything. Some days you may close a whole shitload of stuff but only get to close those deals because you're busy closing deals. The whole point is create a system that you can process and average out over time, because that's how you can create predictable results. So that I can close down the day at 5 o'clock, get home, have dinner with my family, hang out, do the damn thing. Then around 7:30, 8 o'clock, we put him in bed. I've double checked all of my stuff for the day, made sure my social media game's good, made sure I followed up with everybody that hit me up, scheduled my appointments and follow up for the next day. So that by 9 and 10 o'clock, I'm in bed touching my wife's booty, watching some stupid Netflix show before I pass out so that I can be asleep for 6 hours and get up and do the whole thing over again the next day. And I run that shit like clockwork, baby.
How long did it take you to get that down to a formula process or whatever, a routine, should I say?
So initially it took me probably 3 to 4 months to get it really dialed in.
I'm impressed. At this point. Yeah. I was expecting, like, hey man, it took me about a year or two to really get down on a routine.
Whitey, I'm gonna tell you something, brother. When I go in on something, I go all the way. Like, there ain't no ifs, ands, or it's a whole lot of F your excuses, brother. Like, I am in, I'm all the way in. So, like, on average, it takes people 6 to 9 months to make a real change in their lifestyle. But what's beautiful is I created a process where I can help people shorten that process, like shorten that timeline. Because the biggest thing that you most people struggle with is actually understanding what they do all day. Exactly. So the reason my calendar is so dialed in and why I can be so effective is because I know specifically what I'm doing, when I'm doing, why I'm doing, and where I'm doing.
Sounds really deliberate, you know.
Very much so. So here's something that people can take away from this call. Do a time study. Every day for the next 2 weeks, every like hour, take a minute and write down all the things that you did in the last hour. It's like, hey man, at 10 o'clock, between 9 and 10, I took a shit. I made 10 sales calls. I scrolled YouTube for 5 minutes. I fucking talked to Janice. And then, like, I let the dog out. Whatever, right? Cool, that was the first hour. Then do some more shit. And then, all right, well, all I did was literally smile and dial phone calls for the 1 hour. I made 60 phone calls and got 0 results. Okay, that's what I did. And then what'll happen is by the second or third day, you'll be looking at that going, holy fuck, I waste a lot of time. Because you'll realize that time you spend scrolling or responding to a message or like just fucking staring off into space sometimes, like, it's a lot of wasted time. And when you start calculating the fact that, hey, I realize that if I truly want to be a millionaire, my time needs to be worth at a minimum $500 an hour for 40 hours a week. So it's like, hey, did the things that I just did in that last hour earn me $500? Because if not, I'm not operating with a millionaire's mentality.
That's fucking gold nugget, man.
Yeah, that is. Yeah, that's a gem. Yeah.
So, you know, like you've been telling me for a long time, you know, about being intentional with time. So, like, I'm glad that you got to share this with the people that's going to be watching this, because that's something big that I've taken away from you already. And the name drop on there couldn't have been more impeccable either, by the way. I know it was a random name you dropped, but that's funny.
Gotcha. I got you. And I do got to get out of here because I got to get my family dinner going. But yeah. Here's the beautiful thing, man. If someone is willing to invest their time to share something they've learned, it's for a reason. And one thing that I've learned in my life is that God will never put a message in your life twice with no intention. So if something you've heard on this episode resonates with something you heard on another episode, take that for fucking serious business, because that's God telling you, hey man, this is a message you need to hear. And sometimes we're kind of stubborn. And that knock at the door of opportunity, we're ignoring because we're like, man, get the fuck out of here, marketer. Like, I don't want to talk to you, man. Go sell your shit somewhere else. Jordan, you know this better than anybody.
Hey, I'm that guy, really. I hate getting those calls.
but hey, man, if you don't answer the phone call for opportunity, here's what I know. Opportunity doesn't go away. It goes somewhere else.
Just like ideas. Well,
that's it, baby.
I do have a couple questions that we always ask on this podcast.
Because hit me with them, man. I got time to finish out your questions. Come on.
Yeah. So obviously, this is a Wise Words podcast. So I always ask, like, what's a favorite quote of yours?
I got two of them. First one is crush the day before it crushes you, because I know it's very easy as a human being to wake up and let the overwhelming weight of the world absolutely just fuck you up. Like, drama, war, this, that, bills, baby mamas, what? Like, it's so easy to let the weight of the world absolutely crush you, and then it just ruins the rest of your day. So my favorite quote is crush the day before it crushes you. That's kind of why, like, that's how my mantra is. But my other one is call the damn leads. Because if you're an entrepreneurship, business owner, sales of any sort, call the damn leads. That's what you do. That's what you do to make money. Most people forget that. They just think, oh, man, I own a business. People should buy shit from me because I'm cool. You're not that cool.
I got a question for you, and I wanted to ask you this earlier on the show. How important is it? Because some people are natural salesmen. Some people are really good at it. They feel like they could sell, you know, what they say, ice to an Eskimo or whatever. How important is it, though, like what you're selling, the product, and being able to identify at times, like, what do I need to get into, you know?
So selling the right product is a huge thing for people, because here's what I know. If you're not confident in the product, it's going to be hard to transfer that confidence to the buyer. And what does a buyer need to make a decision? Confidence that they're making a good decision. So if you don't believe in what you sell, it's going to be 10 times harder to sell it because people are smart. Your bullshit meter is through the roof. So if I came into you and I was trying to sell you some shit that I don't believe in, you're going to be able to read me like a fucking big old sign that says, do not enter.
Right.
And so that's kind of the way I look at it, is like, hey, if you're going to go into sales, sell something that you're actually going to use and be passionate about learning, because if you're not, someone else is, and they're going to outsell you all day long because they truly care about making sure that what they sell is the actual thing that the person they're selling it to needs. Because that's where most people screw up too, is they're like, hey man, I'm just trying to sell to everybody. Nah, dog, I don't want to sell to everybody, because some clients suck. Some of them don't want what I have to buy, and I'm working way too hard to get them to buy something that they don't need and or want.
Relative to that, what advice would you give somebody that they feel like they have something that they're, or they're really good at something, or they have a plug on something, and how can they, you know what I'm saying, like, do that? Like, how can they transition? They're like, man, I'm really good at this. I should be getting paid for this. What's the next step for that person to take?
Ask someone to pay them. You know what the biggest holdup from people is from doing that? Them being afraid of doing it.
Confidence, yeah.
Confidence. Why do most people get afraid to ask someone to pay them for their services? Because they're just not confident in themselves. Here's what I know. If you have something that you're truly great at, you probably can go online and see what others are paying for it on average, or you probably already know what people should be paying you. Next time someone asks, just ask them to pay you. Mm. And be kind of like, hey man, yeah, I'd love to help you with that. It's about $250. See what they say. Worst they can say is no, or they can be like, man, that's kind of fucked up that you would charge me for that. It's like, well, hey man, I realize that my time is extremely valuable, and so is yours. So what would it cost you to fix it yourself? What's it worth to you, dog?
At the end of the day, it's really simple, ain't it?
Yeah, it sure is, buddy. We overcomplicate everything, unfortunately, but it's just a matter of if you ask, they'll pay.
You mentioned at the beginning of this that you had a few books. Tell us about your books, and just real briefly, your process on them, because I know it's a simpler process than what most people would believe.
So I have written three books now. Crushing the Day is the first book. I actually have a copy of it here. So I'm Crushing the Day.
Maybe and get then that
on Amazon. Yep, we can get that on Amazon. And then I also have Social Media Mastery. This is also available on Amazon. And then I have another book called Cranking Up the Volume. That is an industry-specific training for car audio installers. Anyone in the 12-volt industry that works on vehicles, installing electronics and all of that. I've done some training for that industry specifically, been out and been a part of the Mobile Electronics Association. Basically, I created a book and a training just for that industry to really help them. But Crushing the Day is kind of my storyline. You know, 3 years ago when that book came out originally, I was where I would consider the peak of my life at that point. I was making multiple six figures. I had left my 9-to-5 job. I had really built like a brand and was kind of getting some traction. And I thought, this is going to be the bookmark to say, hey, this is where I am now from where I've been. And let this be the first chapter of many in this series of growth. And what I did with Crushing the Day is kind of looked at, hey, man, here's where I am now. This is what I've done and experienced to get here. Here's some really key lessons and stories that I feel like made the biggest impact on me, because I know that in sharing those stories with the reader, it's going to have an impact on them to make them see where there's certain parts or situations in their life that if they reframe the perspective of it, lets them see how it was really for them and helping them move forward versus being something that's holding them back from the success that they want. So that's what the Crushing the Day book is all about. And then Social Media Mastery, honestly, it was kind of a joke. I did a webinar training for our Apex community on what I've done to generate a few million impressions on social media in the last few years, make a little over $1 million in sales commissions using just social media to sell shit. And I took that and I made a training. And it was about an hour-long training that I did. And I was like, man, I should do something more with this. And I was like, maybe I'll make it an ebook. And then I said, well, screw that. Let me see if I can turn it into a book on Amazon and have it go bestseller using only the strategies that I teach inside the book. Wouldn't that be a cool little story? So I took the webinar, had it transcribed, worked with an editing team, and had it turned into a book within 15 days that I uploaded to Amazon on day 17. It went live. And it went bestseller in three categories. The only thing that I did to promote it was post on my social media profiles and in my Facebook group community. And we hit bestseller in three major categories: social media for business, and home-based businesses. All in 17 days. It was pretty fucking wild to see, man. I was like, this is cool.
Yeah. I had both of those. I would give you one, Whitey, but I've already given them away. So, but man, to wrap this up, we do this rapid fire thing where we just kind of ask some quick questions, man, and, you know, quick answers. Keep it kind of simple. Are you iPhone or Android?
iPhone.
Favorite meal of the day?
Dinner.
All right. Best part.
What's that?
Sativa or indica?
Both.
Hybrid guy. Best
purchase. No, you just, whatever. I don't care. Just roll it up. Let's go.
Best purchase of $100 recently that you've, what have you purchased $100 or more that's the best purchase you've made in a 10-year window?
For $100?
Yeah, or more.
We bought our camper, man, and that's been the best investment of our fucking life because we've been taking that thing out and having a damn good time in it.
Naturally, are you a morning person or a night owl?
Morning.
All right. Well, shit, I guess that's it, man. Like I said, I'm going to let you get to it because I know you're living a life by design in that calendar.
That was a hard rapid fire question for me though, because I feel like, you know, you got a lot of layers. I didn't want to hit you with some, you know, simple.
Hey man, I'm easy. Come on, whatever you got, I'm easy.
Question, huh?
Hey man, it's simple is the way, brother. This is the thing. Like I said, a lot of times we complicate life, and we'll kind of let this be our closing remarks, right? Because one thing that we do is we hesitate because we're afraid that we aren't going to deliver the thing that we want to deliver, right? I call that imposter syndrome, because you know, you don't know what you don't know. And you don't ever want to be the person who shows up and is a reflection of that and points someone in the wrong path because you didn't know what you were talking about. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
So Whitey, let me reframe that for you here. The reason you feel that way is because you're a man of integrity, and you would never stand up in front of another man, woman, or child and point them in the wrong direction on purpose. And so whenever you hesitate or feel that way, let that be the reminder that it's because you're a man of integrity and you want to make sure that the next wise words out of your mouth are intentional and impactful.
Yeah.
Take that. Where can people find you? So you can find me at drewbwilson.com. You can also find all of my books on Amazon. If you search Drew B. Wilson, that's Drew B-I-E, Wilson, standard spelling. I'm on all the social media sites. I'm on Amazon. I've got my podcast on iTunes, Spotify, anywhere you want to look, man, you can find me. But more importantly, if you guys have questions, you want to know more about something we talked about on today's show, I will remind you to subscribe and follow these guys, man, because they're the ones putting out all the great content. I'm just a dude that's on here getting to spit some game for an hour. These are the dudes who are putting in the work and truly making a point to put this content out to help. So I would say, follow you guys first, then come check me out, and anything we can all do collectively to help make the world a better place, man. That's why we're dropping these wise words on them.
That's it. Hey, man, I appreciate you, man.
Appreciate you, boys.
Good to meet you, man.
You too, Whitey. We'll see you soon, brother.
Sorry.
Go get my book, Crushing the Day. The thing you need to know about changing your life from being every area, whether it's in your fitness, your personal relationships.
You need to call Drew. That's it.
Call the damn leads.